Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Welcome to the Barcelona Podcast, episode 100. That's right, it's episode 100. We've had many opinions and voices on the show in our first 100, and I want to start this show, of course you know me, I'm Dan Hilton, with a special thank you to all of our listeners. Whether it's from show one or today is your first show, thank you so much for supporting us and helping us, and by us I mean me. And while you haven't heard him in a few weeks and months now, Francesc Tomàs, of course, who was with us for the first 90 or so episodes, he also again gives his heartfelt thank you. We're very grateful for all the support we got either on Twitter at the Barcelona Pod, Instagram at the Barcelona Pod, our closed Facebook, of course, which is where our La Ronda questions come from, and especially on our Patreon. Without our Patreons, and we did get some feedback this week as well, without you guys, this show you're listening to right now would not even be possible. And for those new listeners as well, whether you picked it up in show 60 or today is your very first day, all those links are going to be in the show notes that I just mentioned, so you can tap in your app, get it. And if you want to, again, join us on Twitter, Instagram, all the social medias, or of course, if you want to take that next step, leave us a review on iTunes or become a patron. That's the best way to help us continue to make new shows. Well, it is show 100, and why you tune in is because you want to hear about your favorite team in FC Barcelona. So without further ado, again, I'm Dan Hilton, joined by my guest co-host for the day, Luis Mazariegos. Again, thank you so much for being with me, Luis, for episode 100. So no pressure. Again, it's been 100 other ones of these that people can go back and listen to.
Hi, thank you so much for having me, and congratulations on the milestone.
And thank you, not only for coming on the show, but congratulations on not your work, but for Ganas Barca. But you also have something bigger in the works that I think when the time comes for that to be released, it's going to be a pretty big congratulations, because the rumor has it that you are working on a book about the world's most underrated midfielder.
Yeah, that's right. I'm working on a book about Sergio Busquets. Details still to be determined when it's going to come out. But right now, I'd say I'm about halfway done, and I'm trying to time it for the end of the season. That's my optimistic due date, but it'll depend on several things. But yeah, I'll be releasing details as I get closer to finishing it on my Twitter, which is LuisM8989.
And of course, his Twitter account is also in the show notes, so check him out as well. Just give him a click and a follow and get some updates on that. The reason you tuned into today's show is we have another edition of La Gran Pregunta and La Ronda. So for episode 100, you knew that we were going to be getting those listener questions from the closed Facebook group. That's tbpod.link/group. If you ask the questions there, you know you're going to get them answered here on the show. We may not get to all of them, but we do get to most. And if you continue to ask questions week in and week out, there's a guarantee that you will have your question answered. But before that, we have to answer the big question, or La Gran Pregunta today. And that is, what is the level of concern over Luis Suarez? And this coming out after the 3-0 win. And again, it's a 3-0 win, and here we are talking negative. As we talk about Luis Suarez, it seems like there are concerns in years past about him starting slow, particularly last season. But now this year, being 31 at the end of the year, 32 then in January, it seems like there are fears that he might physically finally be past it. Of course, he has all those natural tools, and his skill set is still what it is, but physically there are things he's needed to do that he just can't do. And Luis, I'll start by asking, it's not a blunt, are you concerned over Luis Suarez, yes or no, but bigger picture, is it seem to you that Luis Suarez physically can't do what he's used to, or is it just, again, the World Cup malaise? Because a lot of those players, whether it was Messi, Rakitic, Pique, Umtiti, they all took place in the World Cup.
So I think it part of it is maybe the World Cup, and like you said, last season he started slow. Actually, Ernesto Valverde, he said, you know, that he's doing well, and he reminded people that last season he started pretty slow. It took him until about December to really hit his stride. I have in my notes that he scored 6 goals in the opening 13 matches last season, and then from December to February, he scored 15 goals in 11 matches, and he actually won Player of the Month for December of La Liga. So there's a concern that it's almost a three-part thing. One is the World Cup. The other part is that he's a slow starter. And then the third part is simply that he's getting older. I think with any player, you know, once you reach 30, decline is around the corner, and you never know exactly how quickly it'll come through. You know, for some, it's they can keep playing for several years after 30 at a very high level, and only towards the end they decline, and some decline very quickly. So we don't really know yet. I think it would be prudent for us to at least wait until the end of the year to see if he starts picking up like he did last year. Of course, last year he scored, I think, 25 goals, which was third after Messi and Ronaldo. So that's obviously very good, and he had 12 assists, which was tied for first with Messi and Fornals from Villarreal. So, but there was also the concern that in the Champions League he didn't have his best performances. Last season, he famously went on a 10-game Champions League goal drought, which he actually broke. But overall, his scoring record in the Champions League isn't so great over the last couple years. So it's kind of a mixed season that was last season. But yeah, in closing, I'd basically say we should give it a few matches. I think his game against Alaves was actually better than Sevilla. I think he did improve a little. So let's give it a few matches. Let's see what it's like in December. That would be my take on it.
Yeah, you brought up some of those stats, and I have in my notes as well that just looking back through the years, his last 4 seasons, or his 4 seasons with Barcelona in at least just La Liga, 25 and 12 last year, as you mentioned, only 3 of them coming until near the end of November. So, I mean, again, he only struck the back of the net for now the next 3.5 months of waiting. That's how bad it was last season. The year before that, 29 and 13, the 2015-2016 season, that's 40 goals and 16 assists. And his first season dealing with the suspension at the start of the year after the World Cup debacle, 16 goals and 14 assists. And one of the things I do want to preface all of this with is that you look at the 40 goal 16 assist season that he had in 2015-16, and that set an absurd expectation. And you cannot talk about Luis Suarez and the expectations on him in banging in a lot of goals in the Liga without talking about the guy, his best friend, the guy right next to him in Lionel Messi. And in addition to Ronaldo, just the absurd standards that we have now seen set for the leading goal scorer in the Liga, where in years past, but prior to those two jumping on the scenes, you know, 22, 25, if unbelievably 28 could get the job done. And now you're seeing for those two, 48, 50, and just unprecedented numbers. So for him, over the last 4 years, when you look especially at that 15-16 season with 40 goals and 16 assists, you have a stout argument for him being a top 2 to 3 to 4 striker in the world over the last 4 seasons. And for the hope, I think, for Suarez and the level of concern is not necessarily a slam on the red button and say that, warning, we need to put him on the bench, we need to bring in somebody to replace him, but instead that it's going to be a gradual decline with him. And Barca knew this. They wanted Griezmann this offseason. They didn't get him, but they were willing to spend 100 million euros. That shows you their intent. But again, with the board having made some, we'll say, heedless decisions in the past few seasons, you don't know what 100 million euro really was valued at. And then the Frenchman, Griezmann, not being a traditional number 9, that the question then begs, what does Barca really need next to Messi in terms of what a number 9 is? I mean, obviously, post-Messi, they're probably going to need a guy that is, I guess we'll say almost a Didier Drogba type, a guy they really do think of as the number nine. But they need a forward who at least is going to work tirelessly off the shoulder of the defense to make runs in behind and free up space for Messi. They need to run the inside channels as Jordi Alba and Semedo Roberto get involved on the flanks. And they have to have the ability to finish when they're put in those situations. And for me, at least, Luis Suarez, as evidenced by his third assist, and in general, the touch that he still has, because I think his combinations with Dembele will come. That's going to take time for both of those two to figure each other out. But look at the ways that Messi and Suarez were able to find each other like they always do. I think he's one of the best passing strikers in the world. And even on that day against Alaves, when he said, oh, his pass was off, and we think about that pass behind Messi that obviously, all of our hearts stopped for just a minute because Messi seemed to go down in a heap, but obviously popping right back up. Against Alaves, his passing percentage was 73%, which is actually just about at his yearly La Liga average over the last four seasons. He averages right around 74.1, according to WhoScored.com. So 73% is going to be what you're going to get. But the big thing about this decline is what concern aren't necessarily are we about his passing and his finishing. Obviously, in the box, he is still the physical force that he is. But physically, what kind of, I guess we can even tear this in percentages, what kind of percentage do we start to get really alarmed and say he just doesn't physically have it anymore in terms of that speed, in terms of the things that a Barcelona striker needs to do? When is it that he can no longer do the majority of those things? I don't think it's right now, but I think this is a big season where we really do start to sound the alarm bells.
I think there's also the concern about just his overall level of fitness. What is, you know, if he's taking care of his body the correct way, I'm not really sure. That could be also a concern. But you're right. Basically, the standards that have been set have been crazy. It used to be, I know, 21, 24 goals could win you the top scorer award. And now with Messi and Ronaldo, it's gone, it's skyrocketed, basically. But the thing about it is, Suarez is the only player in the Messi-Ronaldo era who has actually won the Pichichi Trophy, you know, ahead of either one of them. And he's kind of always been near them every season he's played in Spain. So basically, I think you're right that it's just this extremely high standard we have for him. And you mentioned actually the combinations between Dembele and Suarez. I saw a bit of that against Alaves. I thought it was actually pretty good. I'm trying to recall the specific instances, but there was one where Suarez played it to Messi and Messi played it to Dembele or something like that. And there was another couple chances where they combined pretty well. They didn't score, but I do think, like, if they did score, which, you know, they were decently close to scoring, how much our conversation would change. And I think Suarez had a couple opportunities. I would suggest that it's unusual that he didn't score one goal, at least. And I would suspect that that kind of thing is going to be changing in the next few matches, probably. I don't think he's going to continuously miss those kind of chances. And, you know, like I said, maybe our conversation will start to change a little bit with a few of the fine margins just kind of shifting.
And when you talk about scoring goals for Barcelona, obviously Messi is Messi. And if Messi's scoring goals and Barca's winning, it really shouldn't matter the bottom line number that Suarez is banging in. And in the same respect, I wrote an article this week for I guess our blog and BarcaBlog.com associated with the show that Felipe Coutinho, I don't want to be overreactive in saying that it was a hot take to say that he could potentially be their second leading scorer this season. And we know that Luis Suarez is going to find enough form to be that guy. We know that he's eventually going to be, again, banging in 10 goals in 2 months' time and then shoot himself back up the charts. But Coutinho, I'm just trying hard, racking my brain, to figure out the last time that Barcelona had a midfielder that was able to find the back of the net in the way that he did. And by ways that he did, I mean Coutinho. Just being the threat that he is from the midfield, it's a dimension that Barcelona haven't had in quite a few many years, because obviously that wasn't the player that Iniesta was, that wasn't the player that Xavi was, even Seydou Keita, Deco, and going back through, it, regardless of who you name, and now you're already going back to, let's say, Amor, or I would even think of Laudrup as guys that really could menace the net from the midfield. And Coutinho does that in a way that it's adding a wrinkle to Barcelona's attack. And for Suarez, you know how they always say, and obviously you're the Busquets expert here, that, you know, Busquets, you don't really see what he does unless you watch him the whole time. And it's interesting that I'm almost asking that question about Suarez, and that to see how good Barca's attack can be spatially in freeing up Coutinho for those shooting lanes, for letting Messi do the all that Messi does and keeping him fresh, it's going to take Luis Suarez to be vigilant, and he's always worked hard. That's what he's known for. That's what we cheer him for, is working hard, giving 100% every time he's on the field, and we're going to need more of that this season. And so for me, a guy that's going to have to, I guess, what, is he going to start 85, 90% of the matches? He's going to have to expect it to start, because looking at Munir, who would be the guy that you'd think is going to replace him, Munir just, with just 10 goals and 6 assists in his 33 appearances last year with Alaves, I don't think he's a guy that Valverde is going to trust. And as scary as that sounds, that number 9 position seems to be the one spot that Valverde just isn't really happy with the backups. And so that's going to put, I think, Suarez in a compromising situation this year to play so many minutes that physically he might not be able to. And again, not to say this is a harbinger of the end of the guy, but Suarez's whole game is about his work rate and about his work ethic. So you wonder with Suarez that, are we really going to be, it's become the media and what's actually happening with the team. I think the media is going to be looking at the final big picture and say, well, Suarez wasn't very helpful. But if you just watch Suarez throughout a whole 90 minutes for Barcelona all throughout the year, I mean, you still have to think that he has enough in the tank to do all the things that he does to make them a successful side. I don't think that he's going to be counterproductive to what they're doing.
Yeah, I think actually I saw some reactions. I think people were being slightly harsh on him. I think he, like I said, he missed more chances than I thought a striker of his quality would miss, but he did actually create a couple chances. And you talked about Coutinho. You know, Suarez and Messi took 8 shots against Alaves, and they played 90 minutes. And Coutinho, he took 4 shots, and he played 45 minutes. So if you, if you average it out to a full game, he'd be right up there with Messi and Suarez, like, taking that many shots. So that really definitely changes the entire team, because you're right, Iniesta never really took too many shots. I mean, every now and then, but not nearly at that same rate. So that tactically, that changes the team a lot. And with Suarez, like I said, he did have some good combinations. And I think you're right, he does open up space for other players. As far as substituting him, I'd be interested to see what Munir can do. But there are other options, of course. There's Malcolm, and Coutinho can play on the wing and move Messi to the center. But that does change the dynamic of the offense, because you're not dealing with a what they call a true nine, but you have a false nine. It does it's not that necessarily that it can't work, but it does change things. So it'd be one of the things that you have to see how it works. But I don't think that Suarez can really continue to just play every match and then we'll expect him to continue to have this level of endurance as his body ages. I think you do need to try those other alternatives, even if it's just in some of the games against the teams that are towards the bottom, but you do have to give him rest. So I think those are workable solutions. And like I said, I think Munir had a pretty decent loan spell with Alaves. Actually, I think the rumor was they wanted to keep him on loan, but Barca didn't let them, or they asked for too much money or something like that. And you're right that Valverde has been cautious when rotating, but at the same time, he did have the option of keeping Munir or Alcacer, and he seems to be leaning towards keeping Munir. There's been rumors that Alcacer would go actually to Borussia Dortmund or some other German team. And anyway, in the pecking order, it seemed like Munir is up there, so maybe he's seen at least enough to convince him that Munir should be ahead of at least of Paco. So maybe he'll get his chances. And, you know, he was considered one of the top talents coming out of not just La Masia, but the whole of Spain. So I think it's too early also to give up on him completely. I'd like to give him the chance too.
Yeah, Munir, a player that never saw Barca B action. He went right from the UEFA Youth League winning squad right into the team with Sandro Ramirez. And rotation, a big thing is we're about to transition to La Ronda. Just not to spend too much time recapping the first weekend, but rotation looks at least through 1 week. And again, it's overreactive. There's so many fixtures coming up for all these teams throughout the Liga. But Real Valladolid, who won one of the newly promoted side, 0-0 draw with Girona. Levante has been the best team in the Liga over the last, the last 2 weeks or 3 weeks of last season. Well, actually 4 weeks of last season. And now 3-0 dismantling of Real Betis, who had 77% of possession. Espanyol, who I thought was going to look pretty terrible this season, 1-1 draw against Celta de Vigo. Huesca gets their first win in the Liga history, beating Eibar 2-1. And even Leganés fighting tooth and nail with Bilbao, which you'd have to think are going to be a little bit better this year after finishing 16th. So in conclusion to all of that, my point is that it doesn't seem this season, after just one 90-minute stretch throughout the first match day, that any team is going to be a team that Barcelona can just walk through. So the point is going to be that it's not a point where we saw last season, oh, you give Andre Gomes a start and minutes against a third or fourth division side in the Copa del Rey, but that's not the point. When you say that you should beat a team like Real Valladolid coming up this weekend, that's a team you should beat. So that's a team that you'd think that, if obviously it's early to rotate, but that's a kind of match that Munir has to start. You can't just save him for the third or fourth division squad in Copa del Rey. When you say rotate, you do mean that it's bottom half of the table teams that are going to have guys like Munir to put trust in them. And as you talked about Paco Alcácer getting shuffled off, again, that'll transition us right into La Ronda, where he may not be gone just yet, and neither is another guy in Rafinha, where we got two questions from Henry and Debdeep, and basically it's, should Rafinha leave or stay? As reported this afternoon, Real Betis alone is what they want. Barcelona want buy, so the sides are not close at all. And then Nick follows that up with what positions need strengthening, if any. And while we did talk about the Luis Suarez situation, if you will, we've basically already doubled down that Munir has to be the answer. He's sitting there. He's not going anywhere, even if Pauco is. So for me, no position needs strengthening. But if Rafinha leaves, maybe you take a second look at a midfield. But again, looking at the market, the Premier League is already out of things. They can't buy any more players. And even in Spain, it seems like a lot of deals have already been done. And where are they going to find a good bargain, or where are they going to find a high-profile guy to try to bring in? I'm not sure that there is a way. And for me, Rafinha, I think, has to stay unless they have somebody completely lined up where they just have to sign the dotted line.
Yeah, I would also lean towards Rafinha staying. I don't see the point of another loan. I think it's kind of getting close to the time of truth of whether he can become a player who is at least a rotational option for Barca, or if he just has a future elsewhere. I think it's either he stays or he's sold. I agree with that stance. As far as bringing someone in, I think you're right. It's too late to think that there's any real market opportunity, or unless something, you know, really changes. I know people have mentioned that trying to buy another striker, I think it's just too unrealistic at this stage. No one's going to let go of any, anyone who's preparing for a season, or the season's already started, they're not going to let go of anyone who's really good, right now. And the same can be said even of the January transfer window. If you have a striker who's scoring goals, who's on form, the kind of player you want to buy, the other team's not going to let that person go, in the middle of a season. It's just not going to happen. And then that just kind of leaves you to try to buy up prospects or something like that. And I don't, that can also be very risky. And like I mentioned, Munir was considered one of the top prospects in Spain, and they signed Paco to be their new prospect, their new one for the future. And now Paco's on his way out. So like, you can keep buying prospects and never hit the one. Sometimes you just gotta keep players you have and just put a little faith in. So I agree with you. There's really nothing to be done unless there's something that's totally unexpected in the transfer window.
Yeah, the bottom line is that Munir again had 10 goals last season for Alaves in the Liga. They're not going to find a striker that played in any league, any of the major leagues, if you will, at least in Spain or Germany or the Premier League, they're not going to find anybody who had 10 goals plus and 6 assists last season while they already have Mundir. They're not going to find that for a reasonable price. It just, the market is already done up. So it's a team, we'd have to say, pretty much being what it is, you know, sans some shock midfield decision and bringing somebody in. Mike Miller asks, considering the Champions League is less than a month away, what is our best possible 11? And again, I don't want to co-opt this answer, so I'm going to let you go first on this, Luis.
Well, I think most of that 11 is already picked, isn't it? It's Ter Stegen in goal for sure. Then Jordi Alba for sure. I think Umtiti and Piqué are still going to be the starters. Right back is a little bit of a question mark between Semedo and Roberto. I think that my inclination has always been that Semedo will eventually become the starter. But if we're talking about a match that's, you know, in next week or the week after, I know, you know, the Champions League knockouts aren't starting next week. But I'm just saying, I think at this moment, Roberto is the starter. And then in midfield, I think it's got to be Busquets, Rakitic, and Coutinho. And up front, has to be Dembele, Messi, and Suarez. There's a couple I think you could argue, but that pretty much seems to be the idea. I think possibly the only other one that could get in there with enough time would be Arturo Vidal. I think he's currently one of the first options off the bench, or will soon become one of the first options off the bench. So maybe, depending on the opponent or depending on the tactics, sort of like Paulinho became a starter in big matches sometimes under Valverde, I think the same could happen with Vidal, but we'll see. I don't think we're there yet.
Yeah, you kind of got to Eggert's question, asking, do you think Vidal would be more of a Champions League player the same way that Dani Alves is used in the other teams he joined after Barca? Well, the caveat to that was that Dani Alves had lost a half a step at least by the time he left Barca, so he was much more heavily rotated. But while Vidal, again, between his knee injuries and his age, he's a player surely in the second half of his career, and we'd have to say later in the second half of his career. But I think Vidal still has a lot to give, and depending on the side that they're going against, we saw the times and the reasons why Paulinho started. Paulinho and Vidal, it is not like for like, because Paulinho was much more of a threat in the air, and he was just a little bit longer with his stride, but Vidal is a better passer and much better on the ball, much better in possession. But while he doesn't have that, we'll say, Barcelona-type possession and the turn and move and those short, quick passes, Vidal certainly is a guy that's more trusted, you'd have to say, than Paulinho was in those kind of situations, and he does a very similar defensive job for me. And that does kind of beg the question about the midfield, where these rumors this week, these questions coming from both Douglas and James about Rakitic, where these PSG rumors to Rakitic, obviously, it's the end of August. It's they're basically utter nonsense. But after the Neymar issue with PSG, is anything nonsense? And the question with Rakitic being a little older is, it seems that the hard line from Barcelona would be, and a lot of culés have said that, while Rakitic is not beloved on the internet, at least, he is a guy that is a wonderful midfielder, one of the best in the world. And if PSG want him, they're just going to have to pay his release clause. Those are the rules in Spain. So they're just going to have to buy the player completely outright. And Rakitic also agreed to go. And we know that Rakitic is a player that absolutely loves playing, not only in Spain, but living in Barcelona and being a part of that locker room. So I think there's a little bit of hogwash to that. And the issue then, if he were to leave, are Arthur, Vidal, Alenia, and Roberto, and even a little bit of Puig, would that be enough in the midfield? I think the answer automatically becomes no. And so Rakitic, for me, I think there's not much to this. And why would Barcelona sell unless PSG break their financial fair play rules that they're certainly going to be inflicted upon them and spend way too much money on Rakitic?
Yeah, Rakitic, right now, I think you're right. If you let him go and you don't get a replacement, then you're basically one player short. And you're seriously handicapping your entire season And that's really not worth even 100 or even 200 million to just handicap your entire season like that. And you're not really going to get a replacement, like I said, unless there is some wild turn. I know that there was some agent talk with Mino Raiola, Paul Pogba's agent, but I really doubt that you're going to get him or anyone of that caliber. So, yeah, you're right. You have to say pay the release clause or forget it. And I don't think Rakitic would leave. I think that he likes playing for Barcelona. And the other thing is that his wife is she's from Seville, and I don't think I think I heard that it was actually a bit of a challenge just moving from Seville to Barcelona for her and for their child. So I don't think they want to move to France now. I think he's good where he is right now, and it would make very little sense to sell him or to agree to that. So I think on both ends, on Barcelona's end and on Rakitic's end, I don't think it's going to happen.
I mean, at least through year one of Valverde's tenure, I really do connect those two and intertwine them, that Rakitic has been the perfect player for the way Valverde wants his Barcelona side to play. And not that he's the most important person to what they do on the field. Obviously, Busquets and Messi are always going to be center to the way that Barcelona suit up and put themselves out there for the next few years at least. But Rakitic has been just so valuable to the team that Valverde puts on. And that does lead us to a question from Lane about the head man for Barcelona. He seems much more calm and collected in front of the media. If he finds success this year in the Champions League, could he be at the Camp Nou for longer than 3 or 4 years, as has been the norm, it seems? And my gut instinct for this, Luis, I don't know if you agree with me, is that it's not so much about Valverde or individual managers and their time at Barcelona, but more that the pressures behind the media. That, yes, some don't obviously get along well with the media, and it just doesn't work out. Obviously, Luis Enrique is not only the most recent example, but one of the best examples for the last few years, that he didn't do well with a rather rash and reactive and overdramatic Spanish media. And even though Valverde is better and does that, what I like to call coach speak in the business, where he just gives the prototypical answers that the journalist could write up before the press conference even happens. But that said, I think the pressures of dealing with all that goes involved, whether it's the socios, the board, the media, living in Barcelona, the high profile, always being photographed, having every little thing you do have a story in so many publications around the world, and that kind of pressure and spotlight, a lot of these men who, again, grew up footballers on their own, who grew up just working hard, going to the pitch every day, getting in their routines, having all of that messed up and just being in that spotlight for so many years, it just weighs on all men, and not just individuals, not just Guardiola, who we know is so intense and burned out in the way he did, and not in terms of results, but just physically and emotionally burned out, and that led to his leaving. But Valverde, I think it's going to happen to everybody. And because he's never been qualified as this, we'll say, a prototypical Cruyffian manager, I think if things ever did go awry at any point in any season, whether he wins the Champions League this year or not, when the rubber hits the road at one point, I think people are going to say, well, there has to be another guy out there. Oh, look, Xavi's going to get his coaching licenses, and he's a few years away still from being a head coach somewhere, but I think that there will be calls to try to, if things ever go out of whack, to bring someone back that the Culés and Sochis feel encapsulates what a manager of Barcelona should be.
Yeah, Valverde, the longest he's had a coaching job has been 4 years, when he was at his last job with Athletic Club, and which happens to be the club he's most associated with. He has coached their B team, essentially. He started as an assistant there. He was a player there. Actually, I heard a quote, I think it was from Rafa Benitez today, who said, after, I think he said 4 years, that's pretty much how long a coach can really be at a job before the players start tuning him out, and that they start playing not to play well, but to play well according to what the coach likes, if that makes sense. So basically, to do the bare minimum that will get them in the coach's good graces, and not enough to bring it up a certain level and win. So yeah, I agree. I think it's difficult to stay much longer. I mean, obviously, if you keep winning, then the fans, the board, everyone will accept you and will give you one more year at least to try it out. But we've seen so many coaches like Pep, or like, you know, Zidane, you know, at Real Madrid, that he left after 3 years, even though he had obviously tremendous success. I think it has to do with burnout, and I think it also has to do with, you know, that feeling that maybe you've given all you can to the club, and you know, the players are going to start tuning you out. Luis Enrique did have a more complicated relationship with the local press. I think his personality was quite prickly, and a couple journalists didn't like that. Personally, I personally find him appealing as a person. I think he's quite funny. The way he talks is sarcastic, and it rubs people the wrong way. I think, but I personally think it's funny. But anyway, Valverde is a very calm guy, and he's not nasty. He doesn't put people down, and I think that might help him at least get in the press's good graces, because that does affect you. I mean, that is part of the drama that goes with being a manager. That's part of the burnout. It's just dealing with the constant rumors and the stories and all that. But yeah, like I said, if you win, you're always gonna get at least the opportunity or the offer to go on for another year, at least one more year. So as long as he wants to and he feels like he can still reach the players and still motivate them, then sure. But that can be really difficult. I mean, there have been coaches, obviously. Alex Ferguson is one example, who lasted much longer than 4 years, but that kind of thing is very rare, especially, you know, in these modern football times that we have now.
Yeah, I mean, I really like the point you make, that it's not just about that culture of Barcelona. This is at the top clubs. This is happening all the time and everywhere. I mean, it's why there's that trope in the UK about Mourinho's dreaded third season. And what happens when the players tune Jose Mourinho out in his third year in charge at the helm? And again, it's only 2 weeks into the Premier League season, but already at Manchester United, there seems to be some kind of turmoil going on. And of course, Mourinho is always the best example. And then look at Rafa Benitez, who's been so successful, and your heart almost goes out to him. As a little aside about what's happening at Newcastle right now in terms of the owner and the resources he was given in the transfer window, and now having to kind of, you know, rebuild things. And you say, well, that's Liverpool's Rafa Benitez, that's Real Madrid's Rafa Benitez, and yet here he is just not being able to convince ownership about his time at Newcastle. But anyway, speaking of Valverde, Rick Satio, who we have to mention has been with us since show one, and again, I'll bring this full circle. We started the show by thanking our listeners and everyone who supported us throughout now this year plus of 100 shows. And Rick asks, as it seems Valverde has reverted to a 4-3-3, what should our new trident be after MSN, that being Dembele for D for Dembele or C for Coutinho, etc., Rick asks. And I think Valverde has already shown his hand that it's going to be Dembele, Suarez, and Messi, and Coutinho is going to be that left interior. That's, I think, where Valverde has said he's going to play, and he means it. But also keep in mind that a 4-3-3 might happen a little more often, but when you really look at a heat map of it, and I did this after the Alaves game because I was curious, where as much of it was a 4-3-3, it really is truly a Valverde 4-3-3, which is, in parentheses, it says 4-4-2, because Dembele is obviously up where the third attacker would be, but he is kind of sitting off of Suarez and Messi, who are not next to each other, but Messi, there's just gigantic red spot on the right side of the field. So while it winds up heat map looking like a 4-4-2, in theory it's a 4-3-3, but again, Luis, and this is tactics, this is what modern football is, you attack in a certain formation. So we go back to the Premier League, where teams might attack in a 4-3-3, but then some will even defend in a 5-4-1 or something to that ilk. And that's just modern tactics in the way it is. You have to be able to deal with the counterattack at the moment, And with the wave of football that's happening, whether it's at Liverpool or you think about a team like Napoli or Dortmund and what Dortmund has wanted to do in the last few seasons, and that might change this year, but with that counter press or the gegenpress, when you have teams setting themselves up for that as well, it means that you just defend differently than you attack. And for Barcelona, they have to continue to tweak their tactics. It's going to be the thing that Valverde has shown, where it's Dembele up on that left wing, where I think he's just as good on the right wing of what we've seen, and Coutinho is going to be in the middle. But having Coutinho have that ability to be the left wing in the 4-4-2 that we're going to see a lot of, I think there's nothing wrong with any of it.
Yeah, I think actually, as far as the Trident goes, the biggest change from last season is when Valverde went with 4-3-3 and when Dembele was fit. Dembele played on the right, Messi played on the center, and Suarez played on the left. And in this past match, Messi was not in the center, he was on the right. Dembele was not on the right, he was on the left, and Suarez was not on the left, he was in the center. So it's been a reconfiguration of the front three, which I think actually probably suits them better. I think Suarez, if he's pushed wide, is really uncomfortable. In the center, he works better. We did see, against Alaves, we did see Coutinho in the second half. Well, he only played in the second half, but in the second half of the second half, he started playing on the left wing when Dembele came off. I think it was, for Artur. Artur was in the center of the pitch. He took that left midfield spot, and Coutinho went up to left wing. So that is definitely, I think, an option that Valverde will use. And you're right that when you look at the heat map, Rakitic was actually positioned a lot closer to Busquets, almost like in a double pivot. And I think the thinking there is because Rakitic was actually playing on the right side of midfield where Messi was playing. So if you have Messi not doing a lot of defending to complement that, you need someone who will defend a lot. I'm sorry, Rakitic was playing on the left of midfield, but Sergio Roberto was actually going forward. So Rakitic was covering, and by playing further behind and allowing Busquets to cover that right side of midfield. That also went with Semedo, took up positions that were not as advanced, which I think was interesting, but there was an improvement when Roberto became the right back. He went further upfield. That's when Rakitic was on the right side of midfield and could complement him better. I think a lot of the reconfigurations that are going on right now is basically trying to find the best system that suits Messi, that lets him do only attacking and not focus on defending. And the other thing that we have to say as far as tactics go is that Rakitic played all three positions in that one match in the midfield. He started out on the left, he played on the right, and he ended as the pivot in the center of midfield. So I think he's also going to be an important part of this tactical setup because he can pretty much play anywhere in that midfield three.
Yeah, it's very, very true. And Luis, as we wrap this up, again, that was our edition of La Ronda in episode 100. I again want to thank you, Luis Mazariegos, for coming on the show. And I want to give you now the platform to just let people know where they can get a little more of you.
Sure. Please visit our website. It's BarçaBlaugranas.com. I'm on Twitter at LuisM8989, LuisM8989. And I will be updating people about my book, and I will be happy to answer any questions that people tweet at me.
And again, for all of his information, it's down in the show notes. You can click that. Again, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram. We have the closed Facebook group. If you're jealous of all the people that ask questions in La Ronda, you can join that at tbpod.link/group. That's how you get in there, of course, to help the show even further. We have a Patreon page as well. Well, for myself, Luis, and particularly Frances, who, while he wasn't able to make it for show 100, I know I wanted it to be a surprise, but while he was able to come back today, there are some rumblings that things are in the works, we'll say, and that you might hear Frances's voice again soon. But until then, thanks for listening to the first 100 of the Barcelona Podcast. We hope we can continue giving hundreds and hundreds more, and we'll talk to you next time. And Forza Barça.